Welcome to PostStatus Draft, the official podcast for PostStatus, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Brian Richards and I are talking about subscription websites and what we think is the future of subscription businesses on the web. We talk about some of the hosted options and non-WordPress solutions out there, a lot of the work that Google is doing, Apple is doing, and more people are big businesses that are supporting subscriptions, and then also how smaller websites, self-hosted websites and otherwise, can create similar experiences using tools that are available to us in WordPress. It was a fun conversation where we kind of talk about just monetizing on recurring revenue. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Pagely. Pagely invented managed hosting for WordPress, and they help the biggest brands in the world scale and secure WordPress. They've had a lot of great releases recently, and check out pagely.com if you want to learn more about what they can do for you and your WordPress website. Thank you to Pagely for being a PostStatus partner. Now, here's our show. Hey, everybody. I'm Brian Krogsgaard, and I'm the editor of PostStatus.
And I'm Brian Richards, the owner and operator of WP Sessions. Welcome to the PostStatus Draft Podcast. Today, we're going to discuss the future of content distribution, and we're going to begin with a look at subscription-based content. But before we jump into that, I wanted to give a shout-out to WordCamp Miami, because I just returned from that, and that was a fantastic event that took place here. If you're listening to this far in the future, the weekend of March 17 in 2018.
It was the 10th anniversary of WordCamp Miami, right?
That is correct. And while I was in town with my wife, we also celebrated our 10th wedding anniversary, somewhat prematurely. Our wedding's not until the summer. But we are expecting our third child this summer, so we thought we'd take an early getaway. And our good friend, Mr. David Bissett, one of the lead organizers of the event, caught wind of this and surprised us with an anniversary cake, which was super special and completely unexpected. So
David is so thoughtful.
He is. Thank you again for that, David. That was...
Well, congratulations on your anniversary and on the little nugget on the way.
Thanks. I don't want to get into WordCamp Miami too much because we're thinking we might talk a bit more about that and some other events on next week's podcast. But I did at least want to mention it because, as always, the organizing team did an amazing job hosting this event between the normal 2 days of sessions. They also had a day of workshops leading up to that, full day long, extra ticket required workshops. And tons of other neat things threaded throughout the event all weekend long that I thought was pretty special.
My understanding is that there were nearly 1,000 people there too, huh?
Yes, they did the math. There weren't 1,000 people there all at one time, but between the workshops and the regular camp and the kids camp, they had over 1,000 people who participated.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
And the kids camp is remarkable in its own right because they had something like 250 registrants for that, which makes their kid camp larger than many full word camps.
Yeah. Miami does it right.
Yep.
Another news item that I just thought was pretty cool is the WordPress marketing team came out with a jargon glossary. So basically a dictionary of good WordPress terms to know. And I think this is valuable because a lot of times when people start getting into either WordPress development or maybe they're like a project manager and they work with a lot of developers, something like that, this is really just one of those things you can go and you can peruse or reference as you need to and get familiar with some of the jargon in the WordPress landscape. So props to the marketing team for that. And I really like a lot of what they're putting together. They're getting underway with their handbook as well. Handbooks in WordPress are, I think, valuable resources. We've got them for plugins and themes and core, and the marketing one is starting to fill out. That's their initiative right now. So way to go, WordPress marketing team, for the jargon glossary. I like it.
And it is huge. We've got it linked in the show notes if you haven't seen it yet. I'd seen it spread around, but I didn't bother clicking on it because I feel, more than a dozen years in, I'm pretty well versed in in the WordPress jargon. There are a lot of terms in there, a lot of them. Really good stuff. Some of the more esoteric things and things that are just common knowledge now if you've been doing any development for a long time, right? Like htaccess, what the heck is that thing? And A11Y, for the uninitiated, they don't know that that is shorthand for accessibility. So there's a lot in there.
I like it. Our main topic today is going to be talking about subscriptions, content distribution, and just kind of looking at the whole business model. So subscriptions related to, I guess, both content and shippable goods. And this is on the heels of several things that we've seen lately that sparked our interest. I mean, one is both of us have business models that are based around subscriptions, so we have a personal interest.
It's true.
But I think also, whether you're in product work or service work, there's more of this in the world today. You know, there's lots of ship me, I don't know, a bottle of wine a month or a razor or, you know, like those types of physical products. It seems like that's popping up for nearly everything now. And then paying for journalism rather than relying on ad-based monetization of journalism is much more popular than it's ever been, I feel like. Well, in the term, in terms of the web, it's basically recreating the model of paying for a newspaper and trying to make that normal again, paying for that content, but doing so through a web-based delivery. And Brent Shepard of ProsPress wrote a post about tips for subscription-based businesses, and there's a whole bunch of tips and lessons that they've learned from providing subscriptions software to 15,000 stores. So I thought that was pretty neat. So what are your general thoughts in terms of the general increase of subscription-based products and services on the web?
I'm for it, but also against it. So,
okay, why?
This is a funny thing, right? So I personally, I'm quite a tightwad. My friends know this. They give me a hard time every now and again because I don't need to be, but I guess I like to be. So I have a hard time parting with my money, right? And this is the problem that most businesses face when they're trying to offer subscription-based information. I face it as well, right? Like, how do we get people who are conditioned to want free things to pay for this stuff that we're providing so that we can continue to pay it, or so that we can continue to make it? And this will be an eternal struggle, I feel. But in general, I think it is the only way for people to be able to sustainably produce stuff that's worth consuming, whether that's products or whether that's information. And the web has been an incredible equalizer in the playing field of pretty much every industry. I've had this conversation quite a few times recently with people that I'm talking with, both online and in real life. Which online, yes, is real life, but I mean offline as well. Conversations that I'm having everywhere across in every person. Possible medium. And there are so many careers that people can launch themselves into now that would have been so difficult to get into in the past. YouTube providing a platform for people to become broadcasters, right? Previously, the only way to get on TV was either to be discovered, to sell your idea, and have a network pick it up, or to pay for it and be on a public broadcasting network like PBS here in the United States, various and similar choices for radio and other mediums. And now people can just start a YouTube channel today using a webcam that they likely already have, because almost every computer and mobile device has one built in. And just start producing a show and find a following, find a niche that they care about, put that in front of other people who also care about that same niche. And ta-da, now they have the opportunity to broadcast a thing. But what is interesting about this is so many more people are now realizing just how expensive it is to produce this content. I saw someone, I think it was a tweet that I saw shared, talking about how most people don't realize how difficult it is to create even an 8-minute long YouTube video that has been edited and curated. And I'm like, you're right. They don't. They know the TV that they consume. They know the YouTube videos that they consume. And they've personally never tried to produce such a thing themselves. And they don't recognize, and many of the creators don't recognize that, oh, wow, I need to invest in a nice microphone so that people can bear to listen to me. I should invest in some nice lighting or understand what makes quality lighting and rearrange my office or the place where I'm recording so that I get nice diffuse lighting that, you know, fills the room.
Just generally the learning curve on creating video content, in addition to the time curve of how long it takes when you add video to the mix, is extraordinary.
Right. And even with written content, right? It takes a long time to write and revise before you eventually publish. And it's super easy to get started. Anybody can start a camera, record themselves and publish it to YouTube. Anybody can write an article and publish it to the web completely for free and get the news out. And that's amazing. And it's never been possible at such a scale previously in human history. But to be able to continue to do that reliably is very expensive. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of investment. And the only way that we can ensure that the people who are producing things that we enjoy are able to keep producing them is to give them money. And that has historically been challenging both online and offline, but is also getting easier on the internet.
So this is a scale. This is an interesting scale question. I'm excited to go down this this little rabbit hole. Creating content, creating video, creating products, like physical products, the barriers are lower than ever. But it's still expensive. So when you're talking about expensive or time consuming, it's still incredible that it's even feasible for a small operation.
Right.
So let's use the video example, because that's kind of a happy medium between just text and, you know, like a physical good that you manufacture. Creating video. Now, if you were trying to say, okay, well, I'm going to create a TV show, and I'm going to self-produce this. And it's just three of us, and we do this in our basement, and we do it with $25,000 worth of equipment, and we can pump out a 30-minute show in a week. Like, if you said, okay, we're going to do this, and you were doing it 20 years ago or 15 years ago or 10 years ago, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars or maybe $1 million worth of equipment and much more time in editing and everything. So the digital element, the fact that the distribution is basically free through YouTube at a minimum, that's where the massive revolution has come, so that it is possible to create high quality stuff for very affordable prices for a company. So this is getting cheaper than much cheaper for people with big budgets.
Right.
But it doesn't make it easy or cheap for the indie creator. So what we've created is this situation where there's tons of opportunity, but there are still great challenges for an individual that's trying to do it. And doing it for free, like we've seen, keeping the video theme, we've seen with lots of YouTube creators, they've been able to create something, they've been able to do it and distribute it for free. But someone could have a very successful YouTube channel with 1 million subscribers, and they're hardly paying the bills to be able to do what they're doing, like, and to make these investments that they're making and whatnot. And that's where the potential advantages for subscriptions comes in. We've seen this at a basic level where you're really not getting anything in return with services like Patreon. So you're essentially just getting, minor monthly backing because they're a fan. But now we're getting into the rise of much better monetization, where you're paying strictly for access or getting something shipped, and you're paying for the product. You're not just saying thank you. And that's opened up a new realm, I think, for what's possible with a lot of these things.
I agree. And the tooling that's available to us is incredible. Right? You can launch a WordPress site, which is extremely inexpensive. WordPress itself is free in that component. WooCommerce is free in that component. You have to add the subscriptions add-on, which is, I think at this point in time, $200 for a year of updates and support. And you have to pay transaction fees, which are in general 2.9% and 30 cents on any transaction here in the US. I know that they're different when operating internationally, and especially when selling.
Roughly, let's just say 3% for the privilege of taking money.
Yeah, but that's true no matter what kind of business you run in any industry at any point in history, basically, since credit cards have become a thing. So your only raw cost here for your site is the $200 that you spent on the subscriptions add-on and the monthly fee that you pay your web host in order to keep your website online. Because the storefront theme that was made for WooCommerce by WooCommerce is also free and extremely versatile, which is incredible. So you can scrape together a very small amount of money and start selling a whole bunch of stuff, whether that's physical goods or digital goods. And if they're digital goods, your costs are even lower because you don't have to maintain an inventory. So the cost is your time plus whatever software you need in order to produce those things. I'm just always so perpetually fascinated by this, that I was able to start WP Sessions with basically a $25 investment, $15 for the domain, $10 for hosting for the first month. And I already had subscriptions available to me from a different project that I had been working on. And so it was like nothing, right? $25. I could spend that on a meal, and that was enough.
And that allows you to try the idea at least.
And that was enough seed money to start my business.
So the barrier to entry is very low, and you're essentially limited by your sweat equity or whatever to put the effort into creating the content, if it's content, or the product, if it's a product.
Yep.
But the technology is more and more becoming less of a issue. So Brian, let's take a quick break to thank our partner for this episode, which is Pagely. I hope everybody knows who Pagely is. They are, I think, the oldest managed WordPress host in the space. They know how to host a website. They host my website. Pagely.com is where you go to find out more about that. Brian, have you ever had experience with Pagely?
I have, and they are not only the oldest managed host, they are the OG. They invented managed WordPress hosting, and they have produced a lot of niceties for working on their platform, such as direct SSH access, where you have a lot of control over what you're installing, which is very rare in the hosting world, and even rarer in the managed WordPress hosting world. So I like them a lot from a developer point of view, because it makes it very easy to work with the tooling that they've created.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of stuff that they've built recently, like a whole new Atomic dashboard. They've transitioned Press CDN, which is their very easy to use CDN framework. Now it's on CloudFront, and it's much faster than it was before, which is cool. I'm really excited about this Atomic dashboard thing they have, though. It's an improvement on what they had before. It's got the SSL built right in. And then another thing that I like of theirs, which, you know, some people don't like managing their DNS in the same place as their host, but if you don't mind it, which I don't for some stuff, then you can actually like manage your DNS right inside the dashboard. And then of course you can create staging sites. You have access to custom CLI tools. So whether you're a developer or you know, just the wrangler of websites with your organization, Pagely's probably got the tools for you. It's a great company, great product. I've been very happy with it for multiple years. So thank you to Pagely for being a Postatus partner. One of the things that's been interesting to me is more big players are trying to get into the game. So I noticed with YouTube, actually, before I get to the Google News initiative that's a recent thing, YouTube, I noticed with some of their corporate partners at least, and I imagine it will eventually become a retail benefit, is making subscriptions. So like their Disney content on YouTube, you actually have to subscribe to, which I didn't know until I tried to watch something with my son. And it was like, oh, do you want to see the full episodes of the Mickey Mouse whatever? And you had to subscribe. And I thought that was fascinating, because if they ever make that available to regular YouTubers, people can have paid channels and free channels side by side, and Google can really own the video subscription landscape, which I guess is good and bad. But it's certainly interesting. It's certainly an acknowledgement that subscribing to content is something people are going to be willing to do. And a big organization like Google is willing to try it.
Yeah. And Google with YouTube has been piloting and testing this a bunch of different ways. For a while now, you've been able to rent movies via YouTube. And with YouTube Red, they now have ad-free stuff. So you're paying for the content distribution itself. But from that money, YouTube is also funding original content. They are paying for channels to keep producing content. They're paying for original movies and shows and things like that. And now they've also gotten into YouTube TV. So they're providing over-the-air broadcasts via the YouTube brand. And so they've been finding lots of different ways to bring paid subscription-based content to their audience. And a major risk of this, right, as they're attracting all of these people by providing them free tools and now providing the opportunity for them to sell subscriptions, is you can get locked into that platform. YouTube can change a couple terms of service and poof, your channel could disappear. It's like, oh, sorry, this no longer meets our criteria for community guidelines. We are no longer going to host your content, which has happened to a few major creators. Some of them arguably for good reason. Some of them just as an unfortunate side effect of being, you know, sucked up and chewed up and spit out by a corporate behemoth.
But the greater point is that it's possible and they control that. They got the keys.
They have the keys.
It seems like Apple and Google are also getting in on this game. Apple, I guess over a year or two ago, they came out with their Apple News app and we're talking about sharing monetization with those journalism partners. And now Google is doing something called the Google News Initiative, where they're spending $300 million over the course of 3 years, which is a lot of money, to essentially support paid subscriptions. And they launched a thing called Subscribe with Google that allows you to pay for news. And I'm sure this is one of those things where people making journalism are both excited because, you know, it's better than ads and whatnot that they've historically relied on. But they're also, in order to take advantage of this, they're essentially having to put their chips in to trust Google to do no evil.
Yeah.
And that's a little scary. However, a lot of large publications, the Washington Post, USA Today, Telegraph, New York Times, and, you know, basically all the big ones are giving this a shot, and that will probably trickle down to local publications and whatnot. And I think it's mixed in with like the AMP interface and all this other stuff. So it's a little scary to me because this is essentially like Google saying, hey, we're going to hijack this internet of yours because this is AMP. It's not HTML. And this is Google News that you're subscribing to. This is not the individual properties. And again, you're getting some advantages, but you're also giving them a lot of control over the future of your business.
Yeah. We've seen this play out a few ways. Before I jump into that, I really want to quickly point out $300 million over the course of 3 years is more than a $250,000 per day. Is that right? So we've got,
that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. More than a $250,000 per day, because it's $100 million per year divided by 365 days is 270 something $1,000 every day, essentially, that's getting invested in this platform. That is an enormous sum of money. I would like to show up for my day of work and collect that 270 something $1,000 and then just do whatever I need to do to help keep the lights on and move on. But so we've seen this play out before, right? We've got Facebook, who's tried to make a news initiative in the last few years. And we've seen Medium try to find a way to pay its publishers who come and use the Medium platform. And Facebook, after they recruited all of these people to start distributing their news directly through Facebook, then threw up barriers to that, making it even more difficult for them to get the news out by requiring, you know, additional money to be paid for increased and enhanced distribution, to now the rumblings of, we're going to make the news feed be more about people that you as an individual know and care about and less about these brands and news stories as a means of combating fake news. And I find that to be super fascinating that they just spent all this time recruiting publishers to say, yes, please come and bring your content here. We will help you distribute it. Except to your local readers. They'll have to do some extra steps to try and find the content, which is no different than them having to just go directly to your website, where you are now in full control over the entire spectrum of how that news gets delivered.
I think that goes into one of the things I find fascinating about this whole landscape is you have these, Ben Thompson, I think he calls them aggregators. So they're pulling in all this content. And the aggregators are in control, but at the same time, they recognize the problems with content delivery and whatnot. And but they're saying like, okay, we're going to fix this in our ecosystem, you know? And I guess that's natural for a corporation to do. At the same time, I hope that people have learned their lessons over the years when you get to these various issues, like what you mentioned, problems that you can run into relying on these third parties, that they're not just going to rely on that. But it's also encouraging that they are recognizing the problem space and recognizing that there is value in paying for this content and essentially giving an avenue for unique content, unique products to survive in a subscription and recurring revenue way. And I think that's why WordPress is in such a great position, because both in the e-commerce sense for journalism and content, and also products in e-commerce, there's a way to do it, you know? And I think that's really cool. So there are several tools through WordPress that'll make this easier. So we're going to highlight a couple of them because a couple of them are new. One that I'm personally really excited about is Teams for WooCommerce memberships. So they just came out with this. I've been waiting on this for a couple of years. They've been talking about it and working on it, but it was a complicated project. So one of the things you can do now is you can actually have a whole team sign up with one team manager for the publication. So this is pretty cool for trade organizations or what, or other things like that. You know, a lot of businesses, they might subscribe everyone in their company. So like 1,000 people might sign up for, you know, some publication about, I don't know, concrete manufacturing. And the concrete company can sign all their employees up that are interested in it and manage it from a single location. So I think that really opens up some of the options for like trade publications, for example.
I agree.
I thought it was cool. And then when you get into the subscription side of things for products, I want to dive into that a little bit. And first, I want to know, do you think is it attractive for you to say, like, I'm going to subscribe to a physical product and get it delivered all the time to me? Do you do this already?
Yes. We subscribe through a little indie company called Amazon. And they ship all kinds of things to our house directly on the regular. And it's been pretty awesome. We did subscribe and save for a few different household-like things, you know, soaps and detergents and paper products and things like that. And it's just so nice to know that our pantry always has them and we don't have to worry about running out or forgetting about that. Historically, this has played out as like fruit of the month club. You mentioned wine of the month club, right? Coffee of the month club. Mm-hmm. I've sent out some coffee roaster subscriptions as gifts to many delighted coffee drinking friends. And it's always just so fun. It's an easy thing to give as a gift. It's a nice thing for people to receive on the regular. And it's something that we've subscribed to in the past as well. I looked into like the Dollar Shave Club, and Harry's is another one that will ship razor heads every month. I don't go through razor heads that frequently to make it cost-effective. Like I could buy the premium razors at the local supermarket and still come out financially ahead relative to joining the subscribe and save kind of monthly razor subscriptions. How about you? Do you subscribe to any box shipping service?
You know, we did Amazon ones for a while, but it was hard to know exactly how much we would need. The ones that we found value with were diapers and toilet paper.
Same.
the things that you definitely need and need on repeat. until you accidentally forget to like upsize the diaper and you're like, oh no, we're on twos now. And they shipped me like 500 ones. So that can kind of put a damper on the savings. The one that I'm actually interested in right now is actually a coffee subscription. And I think if you find something like that, that's very regular and just the type of thing you know you want and need, I think it can be a really nice thing. Or if it's a kind of a fun product and it's something different all the time.
Yes.
So some people do this with clothes, or you could also do this with like snack or pantry style items or
kids' art projects.
Art projects. I think those types are really fascinating. But right now, the one I'm looking into is coffee, because two local coffee roasters merged and they made the coffee way more expensive, like way more expensive.
Oh, snap.
To where I was buying coffee for like $13 or $14, and now it's like $17 or $18. And I want to find some good coffee that's more like $12 or $13.
How often are you buying coffee? Because a $4 increase doesn't seem to be way more, but if that's like every two days.
No, it's a bag a week, probably for home and for work. So I don't know. It adds up.
That's true. It does. So it'd be they increased it $4 a bag and you're buying two a week, there's $8 every week.
Yeah. So you're talking maybe $30 or $40 a month.
About $400 a year.
Yeah. So if I can find good coffee that I can get delivered to me for like $12 for being a repeat customer or whatever, then I'll do that. And bonus points if they mix it up. You know, I get different types of coffee and get to try stuff and whatnot. So that's kind of the way I'm thinking about it, at least. And it's a shame because I would like to continue using the local roaster, but it's pretty expensive now.
You should approach them with a business plan and say, hello, I can help you sell these online, which will dramatically increase the predictability of your bottom line. And all you have to do is give me unlimited coffee for life.
Yeah, that's all. Do you think that, so one of the big advantages of doing a subscription is the recurring revenue, the lifetime value of the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's something, I want to focus on physical goods, that that's something that people are open to as customers? Like, is the customer base ready for that? Has Amazon trained us well enough to be ready for that?
I think so. And we've got, we can see this having already played out historically, right? People paid for newspaper and magazine subscriptions, which while being information-based are physical goods that they're paying for to receive on a routine basis. There were different of the month clubs, right? Like I mentioned, Fruit of the Month Club has been a popular thing for many decades that people have already been conditioned to paying for. It's been challenging for, I think, companies to produce the things that are possible now because the shipping and distribution is so much simpler, and the ability to sell and bill people on a recurring basis has gotten so much easier. I think as a society, we are, many people have already been shaped and sort of conditioned for this.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I think that makes sense. And then, you know, there's another element, and I think WooCommerce subscriptions supports this too, where, and if not, then maybe Daniel from Shop Plugins has created something for it where you can actually adjust your subscription per delivery. So you know that you're going to get something, but you don't know exactly what you're going to get. So you are able to kind of pick and choose the way you want it to work. And I think that's another interesting way to play it, because you're still getting them on your store, but then you're giving them an allowance to go wrap up what they want. One of the options where I think of with this would be like if you're buying clothes, like some people hate shopping. So you could know a certain style of clothing that you like, and then you go in and, you know, you pick like, well, I want this shirt or this pants or whatever, and it adjusts what it ships to you based on the delivery cycle. But you know you're going to get something delivered, say, every 3 months, and that's like your seasonal new outfit, one per quarter or whatever.
Yeah. Grocery delivery has become quite popular. My wife, who enjoys shopping and likes shopping for deals and picking things out, does not enjoy going to the store while also having our children in tow. And our local grocery store chain is Meijer, and it's here in the northern Midwest region. And they have been experimenting both with shipping groceries through other service providers at a few specific locations, but also like drive-through grocery pickup. So you place your order, you come through the drive-through, person brings the groceries out, loads them into your trunk, swipes your credit card, and then you drive off on your way. The former, the having groceries shipped to you, is fascinating because it opens the opportunity for a subscription service. So you can say, every week, I need milk, bread, eggs, etc. And that's just your baseline order. And then perhaps you can also tweak that order to say, I'd also like to include this in this week's grocery shipment.
Yep. So a really successful exit in Birmingham was actually for a company that ships groceries. We don't have a ton of tech startups or anything in this neck of the woods, but a company called Shipt, S-H-I-P-T.
Was bought by Target, right?
Yes, they started in Birmingham. They started in Birmingham and they only charge like $50 or $80 a year, and then you can have unlimited deliveries. And then they monetize based on partnerships with the grocery stores and I think probably like a small markup hidden into the price of the products or whatever.
Correct. It's like about $5 more per order is what we figured out when we were experimenting. Yeah.
And they made that business and then sold it to Target for $500 million. And now it's going to be integrated both with Target, but continue to be with other stores as well as an independent subsidiary. So the grocery delivery world is definitely a battleground, I think, for the big retailers. And I think it's a I'm curious to see if local grocers can actually create their own, like if that would be a possibility using a tool like WooCommerce.
Yeah. So let's use that as the perfect segue to tie this back into people working with WordPress. So we've talked about a bunch of different distribution channels and tech that's available to us. How do these changes to subscriptions and everything else, how does this funnel into the future of content distribution as well as service distribution that agencies and independent contractors could perhaps render? What do you think?
So I think the biggest thing is there is the barrier to entry, like we were talking about earlier, is lower so that through sweat equity or working with a service agency, small and local businesses can start to take on some of these bigger entities and provide very similar functionality and services. And I think that that's possible today with the tools that we have in WooCommerce and whatnot. And I think that's really exciting. We'll have to see, you know, how well they can do that in terms of a competing stance. But I think if it's the right market, like if it's a niche market, then they certainly can. And certainly when you get into content, I definitely think they can. I'll give an example. So in Birmingham, we have ale.com, which is part of Advanced, whatever, like a huge national multimedia company. But then there's these local organizations, so like the Homewood Star. And I think someone like that that's providing local journalism, I would pay for the Homewood Star via subscription, a small fee, to essentially get content delivered to me and manage that. They can create that, a little publication like that. They can create that through tools that are open source and highly available. And I think that's really exciting. And the resulting product can look pretty similar to what you would get from a much, much larger entity.
That's for sure. The thing that I've been thinking about while we've been talking and also recently is treating subscriptions as a value add, presenting a new business plan to customers as an agency. So you're an agency or an independent contractor who's been hired by a business to help them with their web presence and they need to build this or that, right? You knowing about this tech is a huge boon to their business because you can come to a meeting and say, I've been thinking about what you're doing and I wonder if you've ever considered selling a subscription for blank or selling directly to your customers online. And we can build that for you using WooCommerce or easy digital downloads or even with a form, right? With Gravity Forms, you can bill people to submit an inquiry. So if the company is, say, a leasing agency and there's a $25 application fee for everybody who wants to lease with them, they can charge that to their customers directly through their website, through the tools that you know about. That's a bad example because they probably are already thinking about that and planning on that if they're a leasing agency. But other companies who are creating things may not have fully considered how easy it is for them to sell directly to their customers, to their audience through their own website. And they may have also not considered how they might be able to do that on a recurring basis to create a more predictable income flow. And so if you are building WordPress sites, especially if you're building WordPress sites for local businesses, you should find ways to help educate your customers, your clients, on ways that they can improve the bottom line of their business, which both helps them directly, but also indirectly helps you, because you can now sell them more services that are also more valuable to your clients. It's a very good way to raise your own rates without actually raising your rates, right? By offering additional services that have a direct financial impact on your clients. Bottom line.
So there are a couple of features that I think would be really neat to have in our tooling for subscription content. Mm-hmm. One is the idea of paywalls or leaky paywalls. So get one for free, 10 for free, various different rules like that. Porous paywalls. Do you know of solutions for that type of thing in WordPress, or is that something that's still missing?
I don't know if there are any currently, but I built a solution for that several years ago. I should probably look into that. I built a porous paywall back when I was working for a media company so that we could give away effectively all of the paid content to the audience for free, but they'd only be able to see so many in a row without being halted with a reminder to becoming a paying customer.
And this is something that I think would be really valuable, and also to make it indexable. So like the Wall Street Journal does a really good job with this.
Yep.
And
New York Times does as well.
Yeah. And I actually linked up in the footnotes of the newsletter one time about how the Wall Street Journal essentially gives a score to a reader based on different subscribers, and they make the paywall varying degrees of leaky. So based on your likelihood of upgrading. So they might clamp it down once you hit a certain point because they think you're more likely to subscribe once you've committed and you've read whatever, 5 stories in a row. And I think an idea like that's really fascinating, and I'd love to see more work in the WordPress landscape to enable that type of functionality, because from what I've seen right now, we're pretty limited between all or nothing. And I would like to see a world where it was, you could make something a little leakier.
Yeah. Not a bad product idea.
There's a business idea for somebody.
Dibs.
Go do it.
Yeah. No.
Please.
Somebody should make that. Yeah, that's a really good idea.
What do you think is the biggest thing in the future in terms of what you look forward to for subscription-based businesses, whether that's your own or others?
For my own, I look forward to more subscribers. That's the thing I'm looking forward to most. So if you're listening to this and you like the kind of stuff that is getting produced at WP Sessions, you should consider becoming a VIP member so that I can keep doing that.
Look at that.
Totally incognito. And subtle. I'm moving into more super liminal promotions for what I do. Hey, you, super go be a member.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, we've got subliminal where they don't know that it's happening. Liminal where it's clearly being an invitation is being made, and then super liminal where you are harassing and shouting at people to join. That's where
that
I'm
always
heading.
Works.
That always works. I'm surprised more companies don't use it. No, things that I'm excited about. So you already mentioned the membership for Teams. That's huge. Being able to easily manage large groups and put that management on some member of that team.
Yeah, for learning content like yours, that's a really big
deal. That's a big deal. Skyverge has also created some tooling for keeping membership subscription status synced with MailChimp. So you can contact only people who belong to a certain membership tier, only if they are actively subscribed or if their subscription has lapsed, and you can get some pretty advanced sort of segmentation going on.
And that's new too, right? Because you're basically outlaying my roadmap for things I'm supposed to build for PostStatus.
Yeah. So you should get that rolling because that's cool and new and awesome. And I guess other things that I'm looking for to have exist is hard because I, like I said at the beginning, I hate parting with my money. And most of the things that I want to exist already do exist and have a nice subscription feature available. I guess some way of bundling subscriptions would be cool. Pie in the sky, long-term future thinking, right? We're in the trajectory of sort of dismantling the cable industry, and individual networks are now able to offer subscriptions for whatever, right? If you like the HBO network, you can subscribe to HBO Now and get only HBO. But if you like HBO and Stars and Cinemax and whatever, like, you have to subscribe to each of these individually or just pay for a bundled subscription. Hmm. What would be interesting to me is to see that sort of bundling functionality become available for independent networks. So we could create, for instance, the WordPress business subscription where a person can pay one subscription fee and get access to Post Status and WP Sessions and various products at the agency bundle level from Delicious Brains and wherever else. Some sort of tool or means by which someone could pay for a bulk subscription of a bunch of different services would be a pretty cool thing to see.
A subscription of subscriptions.
That's right.
Subscription. Oh, gosh.
Yep. That's the right name for it.
Yeah, I like that. I'm down with that. I like that as an idea. And I think if I had to say anything, I think the subscription landscape for WordPress is pretty good. I think I would say I would like to see complementary stuff. So the plugin landscape is pretty good.
Yeah.
But how are the integrated segments, you know? Right now, if you're going to put this type of business together, you really have to blend a lot of tools and know what to blend. And I think seeing better packaging that maybe even includes themes or email templates along with what you are buying. So that allows you to kind of put it all together and make it a succinct ecosystem. Whether that's a hosted service or fully self-hosted, I don't know. But I would like to see that. So that's my wish for the future. I've been wrangling this for a lot of years now, and it's one of those things that it's a great business model, but it does require a lot of work on the business for the business.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to do that and write at the same time or create videos or whatever your thing is, then, you know, that can certainly be a challenge. So that would be my hope for the future, that somebody can wrangle some of these software tools together and create something kind of all-encompassing, whether it's a suite of plugins or what. And I think that would be really cool because I think there's not just a temporary but a long-term opportunity ahead for this type of thing.
I agree. And that seems like a pretty good place to wrap it up.
Let's do it.
Sweet.
It was good talking to you, and look forward to next week to see what your big announcements are.
Yeah, so that'd be fun. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today on this episode of the Post Status Draft. If you'd like to get some more high-quality insights on WordPress community news, you should visit poststatus.com/club. You can follow Mr. Krogsgaard as well on Twitter as @Krogsgaard, or you can find me as @Rizen, which is R-Z-E-N.
Sounds good. Take it easy.
See ya.